Were we not recording?
We were not recording. Well, at least I caught it early.
Yeah, that's true.
I blame the sickness. Okay.
Everybody remember exactly what you said.
Thank God.
Sorry. It was only
it's
10
so
minutes.
So early.
It was only 10 minutes. We were making fun of Nick for waking up early. Nick is on the West Coast, and he's been partying for a week with Amy Adams. Was that the story?
Something like that, yeah.
That's why his voice is so hoarse.
He's been called in to workshop the Oscar ceremony for next year.
I've been applying a cold compress to Roger Deakins and telling him I'm so sorry.
Wait, I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience, and we're all a little bit under the weather, so our voices might sound a little different to you.
Yeah, we soldier on.
I finally bought a microphone, so I think even though I sound like shit, I probably sound the best I've sounded on these things. I like to keep the bar low for myself so I can still exceed it in some way.
There we go.
We were just discussing, Joe had brought up what people wear when they think they are going to win versus what they wear when they don't have a prayer but want to be noticed.
Amy Adams delivered perfectly on the I'm not going to win but I'm going to look good front, and I feel like Melissa Leo delivered on the I'm going to win. You're going to see this, and boy, am I going to look insane. And if the dress doesn't do it, the speech sure will.
And you were saying that, like, the Oscars were the under...
Yes, that's right.
That girding architecture.
Like made of Oscar gold underneath, yes. Which was nice.
She said something about noticing that at all of Mickey and Dickie's fights that she watched footage of, Alice was always wearing white because it helped her pop on TV. And so
that's
she
so great.
Decided she would wear white to this. Oh. One of the questions she got backstage was like about whether she and Alice have the same fashion taste. And she was, you know, trying to dance around not just being pissed that somebody would imagine that she has the same fashion taste.
Right.
Alice. She did say, I knew I would wear white if I came.
Very good.
Always in character, that one.
Now, for such a poorly planned ceremony, we can't figure it was purposeful that they decided to have the most unstable presenter present the most unstable winner. That Kirk Douglas thing was just sort of a happy accident, right?
I think so. Yeah. It's hard to know what kind of mind would have seen all of that coming.
But man, was that like, that was the one saving grace moment from the whole ceremony, because it's the one thing we'll look back on. That was good crazy.
I know. We didn't know how good we had it while that was going on.
I know, because it was so early. I had high hopes.
And it was just like a white knuckle, intense, like thrill a minute. You didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know what he was going to say. He could have actually stood up there with that envelope for another half hour. Who's going to run up on stage and just take it from him and read it? It was sort of like...
Other than Melissa Leo herself.
Well, right.
Yeah.
That would have been the moment where she would have just been like, this is ridiculous. I need to stop this.
Could you imagine if she opened up her own envelope?
That would have been the crown and glory. But I'm sure it reminded everybody else of Elizabeth Taylor at the Golden Globes.
Well, that's just what I was going to say. That's just one of the many reasons they need to let the oldsters do it, because they are crazy in the good way. Like, I don't care, I don't have anything to prove.
crazy/Alzheimer's, yes.
Well, and they have a sense of their importance. Like, you're not gonna drown me out, I'm gonna do what I like up here, you know.
Right Totally. He did have a facelift in between his last stroke and now, right? Like, I kind of love that about Kirk Douglas, is like, neither creeping death nor infirmity will keep me from this last facelift before I go. Like, if there's anything the Douglas family knows, it's keeping it pulled tight.
It's a MILF island only for the Oscars. They kept it tight.
They kept it tight. There's an epitaph. No, I'm not trying to bury anybody. I'm just saying. Oh, we're just saying, you guys. That's what we do.
Hopping back a topic and a half. Doing the live blog for NPR, and actually one of my co-live bloggers actually espoused the theory that I actually, Nathaniel, thought was just in your brain alone, which is that if you come to the Oscars dressed in gold, it means you think you're going to win. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I had ever sort of gotten independent third-party confirmation that that's like an actual thing. Which I totally didn't believe at all. So, like, kudos. Either you started that theory and it spread, or you sort of tapped into some sort of Emily post.
Wait, so was Melissa hiding her knowledge that she was going to win by putting the gold underneath the white?
That would have been great if she would have just sort of like ripped off the top layer of the deck.
That's right.
All of a sudden she's the lady from Goldfinger.
A tearaway gown at the Oscars.
And just done the Cate Blanchett, here I am.
One of my favorite lines in all of movies. Okay, we need to talk about Cate Blanchett for a second, because that is a dress, on first blush, I was like, awful. And literally it took me about 4.5 seconds to just be like, but I love it. So,
did you guys hear what D-Listed called it?
No.
My Little Pony with Genital Warts.
Wow. All I could think of was the mirror, mirror on the wall from Snow White. Because it's just the whole thing.
Because it was like an oval with all that decorative stuff around
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. I just kept waiting for it to just be like a video screen. And like every once in a while a different face would appear on it. And perhaps a different Cate Blanchett character. But it was a color that nobody else had, and it was weird without seeming gross.
Which is kind of
amazing. Maybe I'm more susceptible to salmonella, because to me that was really gross. And it was so Easter. That's the other thing I didn't get about it. Lavender and yellow and white. Like, I hated it. Sorry.
Okay. I liked it.
I'm outnumbered.
Well, only she and Tilda Swinton would wear that. I bet Tilda Swinton did a little runway shopping.
Yeah, that's probably true. Except Tilda Swinton wouldn't have that. That panel would have just been clear plastic, and it would have just been...
That's right. And it would have had the hands of a clock. But to be able to wear a dress that actually does, like, put a frame around your breasts and
right.
not seem like a Kardashian is pretty shocking. But,
right.
Yeah, I thought she looked great. I liked her hair. I liked the whole... I mean, it's such a nice break from... If we're not going to get, like... you know, self-designed spandex biker short one sleeve situations
right.
like we used to get in the 80s, we can at least get only I would wear this.
Even though we got Sharon Stone sort of dressing up as Helena Bonham Carter for Halloween, like
yeah.
with that sort of the big Bufanti hair, and
yeah.
she's looking increasingly like that scary
Kirk
lady
Douglas.
Who lives at the end of the street.
Oh, you know, she was so jealous of Kirk Douglas. She's like, I would have put on such a show up there.
She's got have a stroke on her list of things to do this year.
Oh, God.
Oh, we can say My Little Pony with Genital Warts, but I can't say that Sharon Stone wants a stroke. For-
hey, I was just quoting. It's like when you swear under quotes.
He's just quoting.
Anyway. So, I feel like we're sort of dancing around the elephant in the room.
What did we think of the hosts?
Well, okay, before we even start this.
Yeah.
I am... of the firm belief that it is impossible to get good reviews for hosting the Oscars.
I absolutely agree with
you. I think a lot of people agree with you, which is why they won't take the gig.
What I don't understand is why, since that seems to be the case across the board, like even Hugh Jackman didn't get good reviews and everybody's like, he was so good. And
that's
I was
the
like,
thing.
That's not what you said that year.
You'll get your good reviews 2 years later when everybody wants to trash this year's host. Or I've seen people be like, why couldn't we have had Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin like it was last year? And I'm like, you all hated them. I was the only one who liked them. Like, shut up.
Why do we even people bother expecting that they might like the host? They will hate them until the following year, and then they'll say they were better than whoever's hosting this year. Weird fantasy versus reality thing where everybody thinks it's something like a completely different type of show than they've ever experienced before.
There are people who watch the Oscars who just don't like the Oscars.
Right.
At some point, we do need to start accepting the fact that this is a long show. This is a show that has a whole bunch of awards for things that you may not care about. And this is a show that is about celebrities honoring their own. And if any of those three things is so incredibly offensive to you, then maybe the Oscars is not for you. At the very least, like, don't come back year after year with like, oh my god, it ended past 11:30. I was shocked it didn't go till midnight. Anytime the Oscars comes in before midnight, I'm shocked. So
TV critics and like the person at your office who only talks to you the day after the Oscars because they know that you care about that. Like mm-hmm. they always hate the hosts, but I feel like, you know, there is a crowd of us who do actually love this and are often inclined to be happy and mm-hmm. we kind of hated the hosts too.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sort of with them. Although I did say to Derek afterward that, you know, just You know, it was almost sad to hear that ABC had signed up to do this for 10 more years, because as much as I like the sort of visibility for these awards, there is something about watching the Tonys every year which totally knows that it's only for a certain crowd of people who care about something that many people don't. And, you know, things can go wackadoo at the Tonys, but it's not because they have this fantasy that 60% of America is going to be watching. And even how the hosts still say every year that, you know, a billion people are watching. I'm like, honey, 100 people are watching. Like, this is not 1983. But So I do think there's a lot of unfair pressure, and it would be great if they just were given permission to make a show for the people in the room that we're welcome to enjoy or not.
Yeah. But
all that said, the hosting was really bad.
Like, even Anne Hathaway's musical number was so completely random.
Yes.
And you know that I was waiting for that.
Well, they couldn't have, like, come back from commercial with, like, a short little clip of their little song and dance 2 years ago to at least remind people. I get the fact that Franco seemed stoned and disinterested and Hathaway seemed manic and panicky. Like, I do get that. Capital P problem. But I just feel like they were given fuck all to work with.
That's and true, yeah.
Fewer people are sort of blaming the writing and production, which I really feel like left them out to sea. And I'm not sure if I sort of sign on to this whole grafting of animus onto James Franco, where we're somehow personally offended because he didn't care, or he felt above the Oscars. If at some point he did check out, possibly the reason is because he realized that he was being given such crap to work with. Mm-hmm. I understand that every year the Oscars, or at least in the last few years, I've noticed it more and more, where they try to set the production around some sort of like overarching theme, or they try to tell a story with the ceremony. I feel like Bill Condon's show did really well with that, where they moved from like the script phase to the production phase to the post-production phase. Remember that whole thing? Mm-hmm. I feel like that was largely successful. I feel like what they tried to do this year with the weird, like, from Gone with the Wind to Titanic to Lord of the Rings, none of that made any sense, and I feel like the show would have been much better without that entirely, without some sort of, like, framing device. The actual jokes that were written for them were beyond hacky and terrible. That whole lesbians thing was maybe I didn't even think it was offensive. I just thought it was incredibly lazy. Like, you need to have a joke there. Things were said that there would normally be a punchline coming up, and there was just no punchline coming. It was just like, we're gonna say it, and then that's gonna be funny enough just because we said something, like, you know, calling the tech people dorks or something like that.
Maybe they need like Tina Fey to write
or something. Like, and I feel like
how much she would charge to write the banter for the Oscars.
But in that respect, I wonder if it's the fact that they've had actually naturally funny people like Steve Martin. I wonder if those people have had a better time sort of shoring up crappy material on the fly, because they come from that comedy background, and Hathaway and Franco just didn't have that in them to be able to do it.
Yeah, but I mean, also play to your strengths. I mean, I personally think Hathaway has good comic timing and everything. Maybe she's not a comedian, but...
Right. Yeah, I would agree.
You know, like, do something more with your opening to use the fact that she's also a song and dance girl. Like, I don't understand what they thought they were doing with it, but that said, I did not absolutely hate the show like everybody did. Like, I thought some of the presenting banner was unusually funnier.
Or some years they just don't do jokes and they say, you know, the art of the cinematographer is like a glittery stick of butter on a morning, and, you know, whatever. It was nice that that stuff felt a little bit trimmed back. I agree with you guys that the production choices were just mystifyingly off in a way that does sort of supersede the problems with the hosting. And the whole idea of just so obviously going for the sort of younger demographic such that it becomes a joke that everybody knows that that's clearly what they're doing. And then to start the show with Tom Hanks, Gone with the Wind, and Kirk Douglas, it's like, where are your minds?
It was interesting because they did make so much mention of, they were sort of like joking about, this is the young and hip Oscars. But I went after the ceremony, Nathaniel, I went back and I read your live blog, and you were like, well, clearly they're going for an old Hollywood theme. that kind of disconnect, that's on the producers.
Yeah.
It's going to go for young and hip, like, make it actually young and hip.
Well,
and,
I mean, that's what I'm always saying. Why? I mean, maybe this is what Nick was getting at with just make it a show for the people in the room. Why does it have to be young or old? It's the Oscars should be about the tradition of Hollywood, which is old, but it's always getting fresh blood. So it's both.
Yeah.
So right. Why not just embrace that you have young stars and old stars and just make it about the movies?
Right.
Well, you're not going to attract a young audience without movies, without, you know, the young audience. The mountain has to come to Muhammad in a way where, like, the audience have to become engaged with the movies and then they're going to come to the Oscars. And honestly, you're still only going to get the audience that was going to drift to the Oscars anyway. Anybody.
Exactly.
You know, the little young Nicks and Nathaniels and Joes who are like, oh my god, I want to see if Pulp Fiction can beat Forrest Gump as I'm a little 14-year-old. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get that broad audience until the broad audience comes when they're 35 years old and working in an office and everybody's got an Oscar pool, and then they figure they're going to show up and be like the, whatever, 65% of the Oscar audience now, which is people who don't watch movies but watch the Oscars and judge them. Like, right. That's where you're going to get your broad audience. Your young people are almost always going to be the fanatic.
Right.
So, way to that.
Doesn't some of what's disappointing about this year feel like there were 7 out of 10 really, really big hits nominated for the top prize? And even at their scale, like, you know, for Winter's Bone to even be the level of hit that it was, and for The Kids Are All Right to be the level of hit that it was. I mean, really, 127 Hours is the only movie in the group that you could say didn't sort of go to where you could reasonably hope that movie would have gone. And, like, to have that much audience goodwill, so you're not trying to figure out what kind of pop and lock are we going to do to the reader this year. You know, like, everybody was sort of on a page where, like, we really could have capitalized on that fusion of having already embraced the movies. And in a lot of cases, them being movies that people care enough about that they might watch the show because those movies are nominated. And to give the time instead to Les Mis. Or just
It didn't feel like a ceremony about this year's.
That was the weird thing, because they did have this crop of very popular movies, and it seemed like the only time that they were even... Like, I really expected a lot of lame Black Swan jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, it's going to be really hard to make Black Swan jokes seem fresh, like, months after that we've heard a million of them.
Right.
But then they didn't even really try, and the only time that it seemed to be about those movies was the opening where they put themselves in the movies, except for Winter's Bone and Kids Are All Right.
Well, but to the point where they didn't even do, here's a clip from this nominated Best Picture. Like, they didn't, thank God they at least brought back the clips from the nominated acting performances, which had been absent for like 3 or 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And I
it
just
made
feel
them
like,
a little longer too, I think, right?
Yeah.
They did not feel truncated. If anything, I thought was a pure success, the way they've tinkered with the Best Actor and Actress presentations, This Is Your Life aspect of the last 2 years, with actual performance clips without making the whole thing seem like it took 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really workshopped that down into a tight format. And I would, if anything from this ceremony is going to be repeated, I would like it to be that.
If we repeat it with Jeff Bridges and Sandra Bullock again, because...
Well, that's true, because Colin Firth and Natalie Portman might not do quite so well.
Yeah, because Sandra and Jeff were both so just fun to watch do that. I mean, I think they made good choices. They couldn't have Monique and Christoph Waltz there, obviously.
Why obviously, though? Like, why is Christoph Waltz in witness protection? He hasn't been around this whole season.
No, but I mean...
Well, clearly he got the offer, though. He's the one who put it down, right?
He must have, because they always offer to the people who won.
Yeah, no, I'm not... Yeah, I'm sure they did. It's just he hasn't shown up to present anything.
But, I mean, I think given that, it was... I think Kirk and Reese were fun choices.
Well, you know I'm not going to complain about Reese Witherspoon. I'm glad you named her among your best dressed, because I did love her.
Yeah.
The presenting wise, nobody felt like too much of a stretch. Nobody felt like too much of a Jonas Brothery choice out there. Like, you know, the banter wasn't there for most of them, I feel like. And even something like Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law, like, I feel like we've done that kind of thing before. They're very charming. Going back to how we feel like, you know, the rose-colored glassesness of it all. After Sandra Bullock did her presentation and everybody hated the host, they're like, well, why not somebody like Sandra Bullock? Why not somebody like Robert Downey Jr.? And I just, aren't we setting ourselves up for something very similar? Like, do we really want to strand Sandra out in the middle of a sea of crappy Bruce Valanche jokes? Like, it's it's not just the fact that a performer is likable that's going to hold them up for 3.5 hours
right
of a ceremony. We need to really get down to the architecture of it, or else nobody's going to succeed.
I don't know why. Like, why didn't even they make a joke about, like, if you don't have comedians, remember when Whoopi kept coming out in different costumes?
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't have comedians, why not something like that?
Visual gags. Yeah. They were sort of halfway there with the James Franco thing where he walked out dressed as Marilyn Monroe, but like, A, Marilyn Monroe made no sense. And B, there was nothing, there was no line after there. There was nothing for him to say.
It was funny. So strange.
It's what I wrote for Toll Road. It was like, you'd think that moment would be really like gay fabulous, but instead it felt like really lame, like frat boy joke about, you're wearing a dress.
It was the hasty pudding presentation. Like, it just felt so just soup to nuts inept. For as much as we sort of ragged on poor Adam Shankman last year, like, there was at least an energy to that. There was a movement to it. There was, people were actually going for something. Whereas this, there was just a lot of hesitation and,
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm too easy to please, but even in years when everybody hates it, I enjoy watching the Oscars.
I said that on the live blog. There is a basement to how much I will dislike an Oscar ceremony. At the very least, I got to see Natalie Portman win an award, and I got to see stars walking the red carpet, and we got to see, it's the Oscars. I'm not gonna hate it so much that I'm gonna regret watching it.
Was it just my imagination, or did they never joke about or reference 127 Hours?
I can't remember either. Again, it just felt so, particularly if you were not the King's Speech or the Social Network, the ceremony really felt removed from the rest of the top 10.
Yeah.
Oh, so, okay, speeches.
Speeches.
Favorites, least favorites. I mean, obviously, Colleen Atwood is least favorite. She read the whole
thing. Yeah, I mean, that poor.
Although she really distills something. I mean, again, I feel like if I'm not going to get shitty, crazy-ass dresses, I can at least get insane approaches to speech giving, especially from multiple-time previous winners who I think might know the score.
Who should know better, right?
Yeah, I tend to give a little bit of slack to the non-actors in that regard, because at least with actors, I can sort of tell them and be like, this is what you do for a living. You talk, even if you don't believe the words.
I can't make any conditions for people who have won before.
Well, when even the sound design nominees are giving such, like, whoever the guy who spoke for the three sound mixing winners, I thought he gave a really lovely, succinct speech, and watching it back, and it's just like, it's not going to be the one that's going to be remembered, and it didn't really like stand out as anything outrageous, but it's like, that's an Oscar speech from somebody who knows he's in a below-the-line award, so he's going to keep it quick, and he's going to... That's not a tough bar to leap over, and Colleen Atwood really kind of shimmied underneath.
Yeah.
In her sad funeral gloves.
I mean, the last time she won, she was wearing, like, a really crazy dress.
Yeah.
So, like, she didn't even give me anything to look at this time. I was just like,
what? She did design Helena Bonham Carter's dress. I know Helena said that on the red carpet.
Yeah. And I liked Helena's dress.
Actually, after the last podcast, I went back and I watched her BAFTA speech. Mm-hmm. And it really made me, for the only time in this year's race, hope that she might win. Because that was a great speech. Like, why wasn't she presenting something? Why wasn't she... My favorite speech, I mean, not to be so completely in the tank for somebody, but I really thought Natalie Portman, of all the acting winners, gave the perfectly calibrated speech. She talked about Luc Besson and Mike Nichols, and she seemed very from the heart without being sort of emotionally out of control. Of all the acting speeches, that was the one I felt like hit all the marks for me.
I really liked Colin Firth.
Yeah, I think I naturally find Colin Firth about a quarter of as charming as everybody else does, but I don't feel like that's anything that's Colin Firth's fault in any way.
I mean, I thought the child sensation line was pretty funny.
And then, do we remember?
Sorry,
Nick.
I was going to say I liked Christian Bale's, actually. I mean, there was something sort of unglossed about, you know, giving us Dickie Eklund's URL.
Right.
So that we could go give him some business. You know, I mean, it seems like a strange thing to do, but I think my favorite thing about sort of watching people be nominated this whole season has just been how much the people who made The Fighter clearly love The Fighter and really feel attached to the people that they made their movie about. And so it was fun to just sort of see how overcome he got, if only, you know, even if it had to involve seeming like he forgot his wife's name.
I was going to say,
I think he didn't do, but I don't think
he did either, but I feel like that's going to be the narrative for like years on.
So silly. You don't forget wife's name.
Well,
he just got choked up.
Right. But the fact that we couldn't see his face because the camera angle was to the side of him deep sixed him there, because if we would have been able to see the fact that he got choked up, then we would have all known. Plus it's a much better story if Christian Bale forgot his wife's name. Let's be honest.
Right.
Print the legend.
But yeah, I liked his. But I have to say, like, you know, in addition to saying that the production just seemed off in a way that's all being put on the hosts, like, I really had a sense too that there was just such a fatigue in the room that just seems to be coming back as a problem from year to year with this long award season that's just getting filled with more and more stuff. And I understand, you know, that we're not in the best position to sound like we're, you know, critical of that, but I think even those of us who do this or talk about it, like, would be delighted to have it go faster, and that a lot of the shit that you just feel like you're in a room with people who've had to go to 16 evening wear things.
I mean,
which,
but theoretically, they don't have to do all this stuff. I wonder if eventually there would be some sort of revolt about it, because remember, like, for a while, I mean, this is before our time, but for people didn't... Like, you didn't used to have, like, 20 of the 20 nominees show up.
Right. People... I mean, I think it's better that we do now.
Oh, I do, too. I'm just saying there was a time when people were not that obsessed with, I'm going to campaign and I'm going to be at every event.
I did that retrospective of the 1990 awards, and, like, Meryl Streep was not there. Like, that's not even possible now. Like, you can't even... But I guess my question is, because it is that awards fatigue is an absolute problem, and it's one of the biggest problems. What's the solution to that?
I think there's a lot of solutions. It's just solutions that people don't want to hear for various reasons.
Well, like what, though?
You know, for example, I've said that the eligibility period should be changed.
Yeah.
And, like, and the pundits are always against this because they make money off of the season. So they immediately poo-poo any idea like that. But, like, if you had to be in a certain number of theaters before Christmas time and not on the 30th of December, you could theoretically have the Oscars earlier, which they say they want to do, but they can't figure out how to do that because there's no way for people to see all those movies. And I'm like, how is there no way? You just start earlier.
Wouldn't that solve the problem of you don't want to shorten season because it's so lucrative if the season started, you know, that much earlier?
Well, we would still have fatigue that way, but, like, and the other solution I personally think for the fatigue would be if you had the same requirements for all categories that you have for foreign film, where people have to see everything to vote on it. I firmly believe you would end up with surprise winners.
Like best foreign film this year?
Yeah, I mean, just like everything.
I just
because
feel like
if everybody who votes is required to see any category they choose to vote on, you are not going to get the same winners at every award show.
But we did this year, though.
No, but they're not required to see them.
They're not required to see all the foreign film nominees?
No. I'm saying...
Because we got that from, like, Globes.
I don't know how to explain this in a clearer way. Like,
I feel like
but this is... I really want to know if you guys think I'm crazy about this. If... The few categories where they are required to see all nominees are regularly have surprise winners. In, like, acting, picture, all those categories, the Academy members are not required to see the movies. So, like, I feel like if that was just a change across the board, then some of the fatigue would be alleviated by you wouldn't actually know who is going to win because people might actually have ideas about who they thought was best.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I feel like that would speak, and I understand how that would bring a different kind of energy to the room, maybe, but it seems like more of a strategy to relieve our fatigue after watching the same people win a bunch of times. And I'm sort of more in the place of, like, not to step on toes, but, like, let's cancel the Critics' Choice Awards. Like, there are all kinds of other Critics' Awards that don't get televised. Don't make them go to that. And don't have press come to the nominee luncheon, because it seems like that's supposed to be about them getting a moment to meet each other. And as fun as I think it is to listen, then I actually think they should be left alone. You know, like, yeah. Watching every single thing they do as part of this season be a press appearance,
yeah.
It just seems to really grind them down. So, like, I just think have less of that stuff. Televise the Screen Actors Guild Award. Like, you actually have to do fewer things.
Trust, I mean, if the Academy could get rid of those things, they would. But they can't.
Right. No, I understand so, that. So, but I'm just...
We know the problem. The solution is just frustratingly out of reach.
Yeah, well, speaking of fatigue, since we should wrap up, oh god, I should have prepared a fatigue question.
Nathaniel, just speak to the microphone. Speak into the microphone. Don't think of everybody listening. Just look at me.
Can I just say that was the in-flight movie? And I was like,
oh, was it really?
God damn it.
How did you get me?
I can't believe this. And it's not like so bad that it's unendurable to sit there. But I have to say, it was interesting to be on a plane when that came on. And like, everybody was clearly excited that we weren't going to have to watch, like, you know, Air Bud. It seemed as though the whole plane was full of people who had not seen it before.
Right.
Because there was a huge rush of, like, yay. And then as the thing was over, you heard everyone in the plane saying to each other, that didn't seem like that was that good. So, and the two people next to me were both like, had you seen that before? Yes. It's like, I didn't think that was that good. And maybe they, you know, were reading my face and knew what I wanted to hear. But it was a sort of interesting moment of, like, just
sweet
sort
indication.
Of seeing the aftermath of what were we all so excited about. Like, yeah.
Here's a question then going forward into next season, because obviously we're all Oscar fanatics and we can't help ourselves. If these things are being covered, we will watch them.
Right.
And so then we will experience fatigue.
Well, we can. I mean, I haven't seen any show this season except for the Oscars. You can not watch them, but yes.
Heresy. No, but what do you think are some other strategies, but besides picking something here and there that you just are not going to pay attention to?
Personal strategies to deal with fatigue?
Yeah.
Taking the time for as much as possible to think about, to talk about, to write about movies that are not nominated at these awards.
Mm-hmm.
To take a break. I feel like my saving grace from this Oscar season, because it got boring quickly. But I feel like my saving grace was all the sort of the writings that I did, the writings other people did that I got to read, the conversations I took part in, mm-hmm. that really made an effort to expand the horizons beyond just the 10 best picture list or the 20 acting mm-hmm. nominees. It was really valuable to me to think of, and not just sort of high end, you know, too smart for the Academy, but like, mm-hmm. what got overlooked on the popular, on the populist side. And mm-hmm. the more you just sort of expand those horizons and those discussions, that's what Oscar season was so valuable to me for, was that it really just spurred a lot of really great, thoughtful writings and discussion about the year in film in its entirety.
I've already started thinking about this for next year, and I've realized that, you know, I have to take some culpability in it. Where I had this thing where I was like, ooh, how many different angles can I approach these particular movies yeah. with? And I'm realizing now, because I'm so tired of thinking about The King's Speech, for example, I should have thought a little outside of the box myself. Not just, because I always do try to think about different angles to discuss the Oscar nominees, and I feel like I do a good job of that, but
yeah.
I don't think I necessarily did a good job of thinking about how to talk about things that had no relation to the Oscars, but that were still contemporary, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, people will think I'm just saying this because we're friends or this is the podcast, but I think that your interviews with
yeah.
Kirk Baxter and Angus Wall and Eve Stewart and all these people that you actually, because it's the kind of blog that it is and you can give things as much room as you want, like to have extended interviews with the people who do that kind of work. was completely fascinating and just not, I know other people do a little bit of this, but mm-hmm. I think that using the season to actually hear from people about what their craft is about so that we're not just reliant on the 20 seconds of what Scarlett Johansson says about what sound mixing is, but mm-hmm. we can actually hear what sound mixers think about sound mixing. I loved, it was probably my favorite sort of series of articles that came out of the season for me. And I hope you can do that again. Okay. Repeat yourself. Be like the Academy. Be like Hollywood. Do what people liked and do it again. And Joe, that means you have to do 1991 and 96 and 2001.
I feel like we're not even going to wait till next Oscar season. We're already just going to roll them out periodically throughout the year. So that was fun. That was fun to do this.
Well, I mean, in my fantasy Oscars, which only six people would want to watch, I would love a little montage before the presentation of every award where people talk about why they voted for what they voted for. Because it would be really fascinating to me to hear. I mean, I suspect the results would both be boring to most of the audience and often horrifying to hear.
Right.
But, you know. But surely in the same way that, you know, I really liked hearing the actors talk about in those last 2 years where they were presenting all the trophies the way that they were in the acting races, mm-hmm. it would be amazing to just find one person, especially if, you know, whether or not it was a cinematographer, to talk about why the cinematography of True Grit excited them so that yeah. those races don't get completely caught up in just predicting winners mm-hmm. or narratives of who should finally win this year. But I kind of feel like it remains an open question how much, you know, even though it's the rule that everybody gets to vote about everything, like how much do the people who are nominated or the people who are voting care about those mm-hmm. arts? And I suspect it's probably more than we assume that they do, but
yeah, that would be cool if you could get people to answer those questions. Well, it'd be yeah. like, did you guys ever remember that screen test series that the New York Times was doing where asking actors to talk about performances from the past 10 years that they just completely were obsessed yeah. with?
Right.
That was so interesting.
Yeah.
Even if you were like, yeah. why that one? It was still super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that could be the same. Yeah, I mean, if enough people thought about cinematography or costume design, it could be the same thing, you know?
That moment in Natalie Portman's speech where she talked about, you know, the camera operators and the other people that she thought really had given her a big boost just kind of reminded me of how, to the extent that this is their workplace and people who are not
right.
their fellow castmates, you know, are obviously really influential of what their experience is like. And mm-hmm. so it must be true that even somebody you worked with six movies ago, you remember fondly in a way that you could say something about
right.
why you think they're good at what they do.
Yeah, I love that part of the speech. And I did wonder briefly, because I thought, nobody ever does this. But then I wondered briefly, a lot of people just say names, and I don't recognize the names.
Yeah.
And I wonder yeah. how often we're actually getting really below-the-line people like that, and we just don't know that we are.
And it's not always just agents and publicists, you mean?
Right. Yeah. Can we just give them credit where it's due? They did not drown out people's speeches.
That is true.
The producers, for all the mistakes they made, they let us hear the speeches.
I think for the most part, the speeches themselves were punchier and quicker and, mm-hmm. you know, less worthy of being played off. I did like that one of the few people to be played off was Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
That was great.
It felt like 10 seconds.
I know. They were really, I feel like they knew what was coming if they let him just ramble on.
Thanks. Have you guys heard this whole thing about how upset Harvey Weinstein is that Tom Hooper didn't thank him?
Oh, God.
Which was apparently all the buzz at the parties that night.
What the hell did he buy all those Oscars for him for, if not to be thanked?
Exactly. Right.
Tom Hooper, you guys. People are being assholes to him this week, I have to say.
Harvey Weinstein?
Yes.
That's the weight of the Oscar.
I suppose.
Just like some movies can't support the weight of winning the Best Picture.
Is that a veiled weight joke at Harvey Weinstein? Because I feel like that's not appropriate.
It's, no. Well, thanks for talking to me all season.
We're going to do this in the off season, though, right? Where we don't have to actually think about
it. I hope so, because I would love to just try completely different things and not talk about awards.
Yes, oh my God. Imagine.
Like, maybe we could all see the same movie some opening weekend and talk about it.
Totally. I would totally do that.
They could put out a movie we all wanted to see. That would be great. I can't.
Bye.
I'm going back to bed, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy your conference, and thanks for waking up so early for your Oscar nomination.
No problem. Just make sure it's in the mail.
Your certificate.
Yeah, I'm going to go meet with my stylist now about what to wear since I know I'm not winning.
Excellent.
Okay, I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience. Thanks for listening in this season.
I'm Nick at Nick's Flick Picks.
Joe at Low Resolution. Thanks, you guys.